Robert Mueller Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter. Dr. Mueller is president of the Southern Baptist Theological Seminary and one of the nation's leading theologians and cultural commentators. To get online with Dr. Mueller, call toll-free nationwide, 1-877-893-TALK. That's 1-877-893-8255. Now, here's your host, Dr. Albert Mueller.
Hello, America. Welcome to the Albert Mueller Program. It's that time of year again as we are headed fast into Christmas, and a lot of folks are already in transit. Maybe you right now are even on your way to family or certainly making those kinds of family preparations as you gather for Christmas, and Christmas Eve just being a matter of the day after tomorrow. I mean, that's how fast this is coming. Christian parents have a particular issue, and it's interesting that other parents have the same issue up to a point, but only up to a point. And that has to do with the issue of Santa Claus. So, yeah, I want to make sure that this is not a spoiler. Let me just tell you right up front, we're going to be talking about Santa Claus today. This is the place for intelligent Christian conversation, and we need to have an intelligent conversation for parents about how to think through the issue of Santa Claus. And that is one of the most important issues because it is virtually impossible to avoid the question. And that was made clear in an article I saw today indicating that, for instance, internet searches about Santa Claus that are initiated by children go up big time as we head into Christmas. So guess what? Your little investigators, if they have access to the computer, are Googling what they can find out about Santa Claus. What are you going to tell them? That is a question that comes again and again. Just recently on Ask Anything Wednesday, I addressed it in summary form in terms of how I propose and suggest that parents deal with the issue of Santa Claus. I don't think it's all that difficult, to tell you the truth, but I do think it is urgent because a lot of parents find themselves in the situation where someone tugs at you and asks you a quick question. You look into those eyes, and those eyes look back, and they say, is Santa Claus real? Or how do I think about this? Who is Santa Claus? What's going on here? How do you initiate the conversation when parents do initiate it? How do you respond when children ask the question? We are truth tellers, and we are also parents, and we have an agenda that has to do with making clear what Christmas is about related to the gospel of Jesus Christ and focusing upon the glory of God in Bethlehem's manger. And so there is just so much for Christian parents to think through as we think about Santa Claus. And we have never devoted a program just to taking that question head on, but given the volatility of the question, the number of emails and other contacts I have asking questions, I think it's high time. The phone number is 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. We'll be getting to that question in just a moment. First, to review some other issues in the news, here's an interesting one. A study's been done of the relative religiosity of the states, the 50 states. Which states are most religious? The Pew Forum took a quick look across the 50 states and then a very scientific study that is trying to measure this. William F. Lawhead, chairman of the Religion and Philosophy Department at the University of Mississippi, is responding to the fact that Mississippi showed up as the most religious state out of the 50. He said, that's not too surprising. This is the Bible Belt. We are primarily made up of small towns, not many urban areas like Dallas and so on, where there's a lot of people coming and going, so most of the people are homegrown. Really, really interesting. Now, when you look at these studies, done by the Pew Forum in this case, done by others in other examples, you have to wonder, what are they looking at here? Well, they're looking specifically at attendance at religious services. So they're asking, how many times do you go to church? And now, that's not the only measure of religiosity, but I've got to admit, it's a pretty good measure. And so as people were asked the question, they respond. And it turns out that 82% of Mississippians say that not only do they attend church, but they believe that religion is important to their lives. So you ask people, is religion important to you? 74% in Alabama and Arkansas said yes. 72% in Louisiana. 71% in Tennessee. 70% in South Carolina. You'll notice that is the South. That is classically the Bible Belt, which has been defined as starting in the Midwest and then extending through the Deep South. The least religious states are New Hampshire and Vermont. Only 36% of people in those two states said that religion is important to them. In Alaska, it was 37%, in Massachusetts, 40%, which makes both the Northwest and the Northeast as the most secularized regions in America. Oregon, by the way, is at 46%. Washington is 11th from the bottom at 48%. They're actually rising So the Pacific Northwest is actually rising in terms of people who say the number, that religion is very important to them. The number is going up, as is the percentage. And yet in the Northeast, it's going down. Now, you will make of this what you will. It's an interesting study. In one sense, it tells us what we already know. The Bible Belt got the term, the name, the Bible Belt, because it was understood to be an area of a great deal of overt Christian activity and where people more commonly identified with Christianity and the Christian church. But at the same time, when you're measuring religiosity, that doesn't necessarily tell you a great deal about the convictions, the penetration of the worldview into the life, the discipleship. That can't be measured by the Pew Forum and this kind of survey. But it is still interesting. It's worth taking note of. It reminds me of a study that Peter Berger, the great sociologist at Boston University, talked about for many years, a study looking not at the 50 American states, but across all the nations of the world. And he came up with the fact that the most religious people, measured by the kind of religious devotion and the other markers that scientists can follow, they said, the most religious country in the world is India. And the least religious was Sweden. Talking about how secular some American elites are, whereas the vast majority of Americans identify with religious faith, Peter Berger said, America is a nation of Indians presided over by an elite of Swedes. That may hit some of you later. There's a lot of truth in that, no doubt. Interesting study has come out about the top internet searches that are initiated by children in 2009. In 2009, the top searches of children on the internet were YouTube, Google, and Facebook. You can pretty much expect that. That doesn't appear to be breathtaking, earth-shaking news. But the next two of the top five will shock you. This is children here, not even teenagers, but children. Number four was sex, and number five was porn. According to this report, kids spend most of the time searching for music-related topics at 30%, then video-related topics at 12%. The most popular celebrity kids searched for was Michael Jackson, followed by Taylor Swift. That's very interesting. Other top celebrities on kids' list of searches included Miley Cyrus, Lady Gaga, Justin Bieber, Selena Gomez. A lot of folks here, a lot of whom I frankly don't even recognize. When it comes to sex, by the way, differentiated between boys and girls, it ranked number four for boys and number five for girls. But when it comes to porn, this tells you something of the difference between males and females in terms of patterns of sin and interest. Porn ranked number five for boys, but number 24 for girls. The healthcare issue continues to dominate the news coming out of Washington. Senate Majority Leader Harry Reid believes that he has the 60 votes necessary to pass the entire Senate form of the legislation that would, after all, reformulate about one-sixth of the U.S. economy. However, this 2,457-page bill is not expected to be voted on by the full Senate until Christmas Eve, potentially at 8 o'clock at night. According to news reports, the Senate last convened on Christmas Eve in 1963, dealing with an emergency related to the Vietnam War. So it's going to be very interesting to see just how many senators are going to be glad to be kept until 8 o'clock on Christmas Eve in order to pass this legislation. I've talked about the actual content of the legislation and my concerns about it. The big issue for me, you know, quite frankly, there are many big issues, but the biggest of them all is what's going to happen in terms of the abortion issue with the conference process when the bill goes to the conference committee, which means that you have leaders of the House and leaders of the Senate negotiating on a common form of the bill in order to have the legislation that can then be passed on to the President of the United States for his signature. Very, very interesting. There's a lot to be looked at here. Remember the talk about end-of-life issues? That's still very much a matter of concern. The debate over the public option? Well, remember the House bill has a public option. The Senate bill does not. Also, just on the abortion issue, remember that because of the Stupak Amendment, the House of Representatives version of the bill is much more restrictive of abortion than is the Senate side. And it'll be interesting to see in the give and take of politics what is given and what is taken. A lot of conversation from time to time about the war on Christmas. I've intentionally stayed away from that just in terms of our conversation this year. Not that there's nothing to the story, but that, you know, quite frankly, I think Christians sometimes protest where we should not. Let's make certain that we not only know what Christmas is all about, that we also bear testimony to Christ during the season. It is interesting, however, that the majority of Americans still say Merry Christmas rather than Happy Holidays. About 60% of Americans say when they greet persons at this time of the year, they say Merry Christmas. About 23% say Happy Holidays, and presumably the rest of these folks, well, I hope they're saying happy something, but maybe they're saying nothing at all. I hope you're ready to say something about Santa Claus on the program today. We're talking about how Christian parents should think through the issue of Santa Claus and how we should talk about Santa Claus with our children. The phone number, 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK on the Albert Mueller Program.
The Superior Gold Group, a precious metals firm, is proud to sponsor the Albert Mueller Program. You can get more information about buying gold at 866-432-8656.
Welcome back to the Albert Mueller Program. The question of Santa is one that is pressed upon just about every parent, and you can think that your child is in a Santa-free environment until you all of a sudden understand that that just doesn't work. We live in a culture in which Santa is very much a part, very much out there in terms of the cultural conversation, very much right in front of your face in terms of going to the shopping center, local department store. And, of course, it's still, whether you recognize it or not, is very much a part of the conversation among children. And Christian parents have had to think through this for a long time, especially in the mid-20th century American scene and later when Santa has now dominated so much in terms of the cultural festivities of Christmas. Santa has been a part of Christmas festivities going back, whether Father Christmas or St. Nicholas, going back centuries. But in terms of the absolute, ubiquitous nature of Santa Claus, which is to say he's here, he's there, he's everywhere in terms of the American Christmas, that is dated back to the early years of the 20th century when Santa became part of the marketing, merchandising of Christmas, a part of the sentimentalizing of Christmas, and of course, part of the entertainment. My generation of the baby boomers, that the whole Santa reindeer thing and Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer, those annual Christmas specials and all the rest were very much a part of growing up just in terms of American television when you were a kid born in the 50s or the 60s. And of course, just looking at the greeting cards, the decorations and all the rest, Santa is just about everywhere. And that leads to the questions that children ask their parents. What about Santa Claus? Is Santa Claus real? How do you deal with that in your family? Now, just a few days ago, I set out just a few of the principles that I think might be helpful in thinking this through. And I did so in the context of the program Ask Anything Wednesday a few days ago. But even since then, I've received so many questions, inquiries on this. It seems like we need to have a conversation focused on it. So you've got the heads up here. If you don't want someone around you hearing us talk about Santa Claus, well, now you've been warned. It's interesting that puts Santa Claus and sex in the same category. A little heads up warning, that's what we're talking about. But the phone number is 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. Let's go to Louisville, Kentucky. Chad's listening on WFIA. Chad, what do you think?
Dr. Mueller, a few years ago when my daughter was about 5 or 6, she had a lot of pointed questions about Santa and who he was, and we didn't want there to be any confusion because at the same time she was asking questions about Christ, and we didn't want her to feel misled or to have any questions that Santa's real one minute, not real the next, and then the same for Christ.
You know, Chad, hang with me here a minute because I need your help to think this through. I need to ask you a follow-up question. When your daughter asks you the question, what about Santa Claus, to what extent did you recognize the question as being one that really demanded truth-telling? Because I think that's really the important issue here. In other words, you felt obligated to tell her the truth.
That's correct. She was, mature for her age. She had a lot of very good questions. I grew up knowing Santa and have no, bad feelings towards my parents as far as, I had fun. But at the same time, my daughter was asking very pointed questions about Christ, and I just didn't want there to be any opportunity for any doubt in her mind that Christ is real and Santa is just a fun figure of our imagination.
Okay, Chad, thank you so much. That distinction is one I think we can all as adults understand, and I think as Christians we understand it to be important. The reason why I wanted to press Chad a little bit on that, and I appreciated his response, is the fact that let's just establish right up front that Christian parents have to be those who tell the truth. We must never misrepresent reality to our children. We must never tell them a lie, and we must never fail to tell them the truth. Now, that does not mean that we tell them everything. We understand there's an age-appropriate knowledge. We do not, you know, sit down and talk about the facts of life with a toddler in terms of human reproduction. That's not necessary. And so when we talk about where he came from, we talk about God sending him to us. And then when mom's, expecting little brother, little sister, we can talk about the fact that the baby's in her tummy. But you don't go into elaborate physiology, anatomy, much less sex education, because that's not what the child needs. But you are going to tell the child the truth. I hope you're not going to say to the child, a stork brought you. And just in case any of you are wondering about that, that's not true. And the matter of telling the truth is of urgent importance, especially as Christian parents consider what we do. But the question is, how do you tell the truth in the right way? And how much of the truth do you tell about Santa Claus when you're asked? Chad, I really appreciate your response. Let's go to Peoria, Illinois. Kim is listening on WPEO. Go ahead, Kim.
Hi, Merry Christmas. This happened years ago because my children are much older now. But one of my main concerns, and this was my oldest child, so I was a first-time parent. One of my main concerns was, where did the question of Santa Claus come from? What was his level of thinking? And I had younger children that I didn't want him to kind of mess it up for them. So when he came to me, and we've always had the philosophy of, if you're old enough to ask a question, you're old enough to get a truthful answer, or at least what we consider to be truthful under the circumstances. And he says, Mom, is there a Santa Claus? And I said, no. What do you think? And he said, well, I don't know what to think. And I said, well, you know what? And I kind of looked at his expression, to kind of feel out where he was coming from, because I didn't want to crush him. But I didn't want to flat out lie to him because he asked the question. And I just looked at him. I said, well, you know what? I said, if you don't know what to think, let's just put it this way. And I kind of smiled, and I just told him, I said, if you don't believe in Santa Claus, or at least act like you believe in Santa Claus around here, you get SWAT for Christmas. And I kind of smiled and winked. And he just smiled back, and he goes, oh, okay. And he was fine with that, never asked me any more questions, and the younger siblings didn't find out until they were older as well. So it worked out really well for us.
All right, Kim, I appreciate your call. It's good to hear from you there in Peoria. I'll tell you what I said earlier and how I've treated this through the years when people ask, and it's also how Mary, my wife, and I dealt with this, and that is that we never want to imply that something is true when we know it's not. So, for instance, with our two children, we never told them to expect that Santa Claus was going to bring them presents at Christmas. We never told them that Santa Claus travels all over the world with his reindeer and his sleigh delivering presents. We never told them that Santa has a workshop with the elves at the North Pole. We never did that. We did tell our children that Santa is a story. We did tell them that. And that's where I think we can plug into the narrative lives of our children. Children are narratologists. That is to say, they are built to tell and to hear stories, and they understand stories. Bruno Bettelheim, the late psychiatrist, pointed out that in his book, The Uses of Enchantment, that children need stories in order to learn. They need stories for moral learning. They need to know about Hansel and Gretel so that they don't follow people into the woods. They need to know about Little Red Riding Hood so that they'll know that there are people who will harm them and tell them lies. We know all kinds of things through the telling of stories, but children very early have the ability to detect when you're saying, here's a story, and when you're saying, here's what happened. I appreciate something Kim said. We really don't want our children to be the little demythologizers of Santa Claus, which is to say, we really don't want our children running up and down the elementary school hallways announcing that Santa isn't real. We need to tell them how to be respectful with a story, but we also need to make clear that they understand this is a story, kids. You can understand a story. You know what a story is. You can learn a lot from a story. Sometimes there's a lot to a story. When we come back, we'll talk about a little bit more to the Santa Claus story than many parents actually understand. Coast to Coast, you're listening to the Albert Mueller Program. The number is 877-893-8255 for your call. We'll be right back.
You're listening to the Albert Mohler Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter. To get online, call toll-free 1-877-893-TALK. That's 1-877-893-8255. Or go to www.albertmohler.com. Here again is your host, Dr. Albert Mohler.
Welcome back to the Albert Mohler Program. The phone number to join the conversation about Santa Claus and Christian parents is 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. Let's go to Rich calling from Louisville, Kentucky, listening on WFIA. What do you think, Rich?
Yes, hi, Mr. Mohler. I think that telling your child about the truth about Santa is very important. It's kind of an age-appropriate time. Like, I think it kind of coincides with John 14:6 about being the parent, also showing them who is really the truth. And when you kind of go along with the story of society and of the pressure of it from grandma and grandpa saying, oh, there's Santa's going to leave a present for you if you don't really take the time and show them who the truth really is of Christ, then you're kind of putting up a door in front of them, and they don't really see it, and they don't really put a trust in you as they would the Father.
Yeah.
And I think that's something it's an age-appropriate thing. It's kind of like an age of accountability.
You know, Rich, boy, you put a lot on the table there. But I'll tell you, there is an age-appropriate character to a lot of the way we talk with our children. And we all recognize that. The way we teach them, the way we set the rules and boundaries for them, the expectations we have of them, the way we discipline them, that's all measured in a way that we hope is age-appropriate. I think there comes a day when every child's going to have to know in a very explicit way, kind of black and white, yes or no, on a number of issues. Most of them have kind of intuited their way there. I do think, again, that the way to deal with this most helpfully is to make clear to children that there is a story to Santa Claus. First of all, there's an historical story. There is an historical character named St. Nicholas who was involved there. The most important of the characters is Nicholas of Myra. By the way, Myra is in modern-day Turkey. And he lived about the years 270 to 347, very crucial years in church history. He was known for evangelism and for secret gift giving. He primarily left coins in shoes. And most historians link St. Nicholas, who became Santa Claus in terms of German and Dutch influence, along with a lot of English and British marketing, than American know-how. All you really have is the historical character of St. Nicholas here. And so there's someone from the history of the church to point to and say, well, there really was someone named St. Nick, St. Nicholas. This was his name. He was a man understood to do many good things in the name of Christ, including giving gifts. So the idea that there's someone named Nicholas, St. Nicholas, that gave gifts, well, we come to understand there is an historical root for that. There's a good story to be told there. And it's a good reminder of the fact that Christians are indeed those who are to give and to encourage, and to be kind. But then you can tell people, your children in particular, you know, from that story, there emerge all kinds of stories about Santa Claus that are really just a part of kind of cartoon land. You know, they're the kinds of stories of fantasy. They're the stories that we like to talk about in here, but you as a child can tell the difference between that kind of story and when we tell you that something is real. We tell you that something is true. And when it comes to a man that with elves builds toys, when it comes to a man who rides in a sleigh and distributes toys to good boys and girls everywhere across the world in one 24-hour period of Christmas Eve, you know, kids very early and easily intuit an issue there. And that's where the truth-telling comes in. We, as Christian parents, are called to the essential task of telling our children always the truth. And one thing I want to watch on this program is people who say, it's all right to tell an untruth to your child until a certain age when you have to tell them the truth. I think that's very dangerous. Now, I think Rich's point is very interesting, which is to say we want to make certain that our children, for instance, when grandmother says, you don't want to misbehave so that Santa Claus will bring you a gift, you don't want the child to be rude in responding. You don't want the child to feel like that, he or she has to be the great clarifier of the reality or unreality of Santa Claus in every single conversation. You can just tell them this is a story, and people love to tell this story at Christmas. They love to talk about Santa Claus, and when people talk to you about Santa Claus, you know the truth. You know what they're talking about. You be kind, and you be courteous in response, but you know that Christmas is about the birth of Jesus. And not only is that story superior in every way because it's about our salvation, it is superior because it's true. is the truest truth in the entire world. The Word became flesh and dwelt among us. Now that's the truth that will make all the difference, not only for this life, but for eternity in the life of that child. That's the truth on which you want them to stake their lives. That's the truth they want to hear from you, knowing that you would not tell them what is not true, and you would not fail to tell them the truth. The Christmas season brings all kinds of complexities, doesn't it? And maybe with Santa Claus, the issue is not only what you say to them, but what extended family will say, but that's just to prepare children for the fact they're going to have to learn how to negotiate those rapids for the rest of their lives. It's not easy for mom and dad at Christmas either. Back with more on the Albert Mueller Program.
The Superior Gold Group, a precious metals firm, is proud to sponsor the Albert Mueller Program. You can get more information about buying gold at 866-432-8656.
Welcome back to the Albert Mueller Program. To join the conversation, give us a call at 877-893-8255. We're talking about Christian parents and Santa, the number 877-893-8255. How are you handling it? Let's go to Sellersburg, Indiana. Donna's listening on WFIA. Go ahead, Donna.
Hi. For us, when my daughter was younger, we were not walking with Christ at the time. And even though we told her of the birth of Christ and also told her about Santa Claus, as we started walking with the Lord, she actually asked us last year if there was a real Santa Claus. And it was a matter of being truthful. And we told her, you know, no, there's not. You know, the real reason why we celebrate Christmas is because of Jesus' birth, and I think for us that was just another way that we had to show that we had to set ourselves apart from the rest of the world's views.
You know, I really love that, Donna, and it just demonstrates again what happens when we are regenerate believers in the Lord Jesus Christ. Everything gets turned upside down, and before you know it, you're having to unthink the ways we used to think. Christianity makes those demands upon us, and your daughter got to observe that in you. I think that's just phenomenal. I really appreciate your call, Donna. Let's go to Tressa, calling from Juniata, listening on KMMJ.
Yes, hello. This is Tressa.
Go ahead, Tressa.
Can we hear you? I have a 10-year-old son. He's really a deep thinker. We are raising him to believe that Christ is his Savior, and Sunday school, family Bible studies, you know, go to church, all of that. And he also firmly believes that Santa Claus is real, that even though Christ is his Savior, he believes that surely God must give Santa some of this ability to do what he does. And my husband and I are kind of at a standstill as to where to go with guiding him gently and lovingly.
Okay, now help me to know what your main question is there, Tressa. What are you trying to think through?
How to continue to, I mean, we flat out have said that, you know, Santa Claus is a fairy tale. We have never, ever, you know, signed gifts from Santa and that sort of thing. How do we continue guiding him and, you know, lovingly showing him that Santa is not real, that Christ is the only one that has the ability to do anything supernatural like Santa is supposed to be able to do?
Yeah, boy, you're getting to some of the good stuff there, Tress. Let me ask you a question. Do you think your 10-year-old son is really, really in any sense uncertain as to whether Santa's real?
I don't know. I don't know. When we try to talk about it or just say, well, what do you think? I mean, even when we started listening to your program today, I'd say, well, what do you think about that, son? And he says, well, you cannot get me to deny my belief about Santa Claus. That's what he says.
Tressa, I really appreciate your call. Let me tell you, and I believe him when you say he is smart. And by the way, he in making that statement kind of indicated an intellectual understanding of what exactly you were talking about. And it's more a resistance of the will than it is a resistance of the mind. And, you know, at 10 years of age, especially pre-adolescence, all kinds of new ways of thinking. Indeed, in fact, for the first time, you have the development of the brain in the child towards complex, what are called higher level thoughts. He's able to think about thinking. You know, Tressa, I would suggest that you and your husband, you sit down with him And as you have an opportunity as parents to talk with him, I think I would simply say, look, you know, you've reached a stage where knowing the difference between a story that's real and a story that's fun is really important. This is a part of growing up. And I would certainly say that double digits are a very important time to get that down. And lovingly and kindly, but firmly and clearly, I think I would just set that out and say, you know, the pretend is very important. You know, the use of the imagination is very important. And the good, consecrated, God-honoring use of the imagination is a wonderful thing, and we're going to celebrate it with you. But, you know, you're old enough to know that when something happens and you have to go testify it in court, you're not just telling a story, you're telling about the truth. And you know, when we talk about the importance of what happened in Bethlehem, we're not just talking about a tale. We're talking about the truth. And, you know, you're smart enough to know that there is not a man chubby, rosy-cheeked, tummy that vibrates and looks like a bowl full of jelly. That man does not exist in any sense that he's carrying around gifts to children everywhere. But Tressa, let me tell you, you tripped up something there that's really important. You talked about supernatural qualities being ascribed to Santa. I was waiting for someone to say it, and you said it. But so also, by the way, did Cheryl, who was writing it on Facebook. She said, we put the emphasis on Jesus Christ and tell the kids that Santa Claus is pretend based on the historical St. Nicholas and just for fun. And then she says this, many of the attributes given to Santa actually belong to God that is always watching. And you know, Tressa and Cheryl are exactly right. Here is one of the problems about Santa Claus that some Christian parents don't even think about. We've got to be very, very careful to make clear that someone is watching them. Someone does see them when they're naughty and when they're nice, to use that language. Someone's watching them all the time. Someone knows their every thought before they think it, their every act before they act upon it. And that is the Almighty God who created them, the Father who sent Jesus Christ in Bethlehem. It's very, very important to get that right. Again, we have children who are going to be bringing up all kinds of things. Listen, you know, I learned something new today. I did not know this until this morning. I did not know that Superman, that's the comic book character, folks, was actually the creation of two Jewish men who modeled Superman after Moses. I didn't know that until this morning. Those who were up on all things Superman undoubtedly knew that a long time ago. But I had no clue. But you know what? It is interesting that a lot of these things get picked up, and next thing you know, what should be ascribed only to God gets ascribed to anyone from Superman to Saint Nick to Santa Claus. Christian parents have a real responsibility of truth telling. We have to be the people our children can count upon at every time and at every turn to tell them the truth. We need to tell them the truth in a way that not only is understandable to them, but is genuinely helpful to them. And that means helping them understand the difference between an historical account and a story, something that really happened and something that didn't. But, you know, there are things that didn't happen that are true in stories in the sense that a story claims them to be true that is really important. There are things that stories tell us that we learn through stories, but we've got to learn the difference between narrative, imagination, fantasy, story, fairy tale, and the truth. God was in Christ reconciling sinners. That's not just a story. It's embedded in a story, but it's the story that actually happened. It's the story that's truer than true. I'll be right back with the Albert Mueller Program. Welcome back to the Albert Mueller Program. We've been talking about a lot having to do with Christian parents thinking through Santa Claus. Those words, he knows when you've been naughty or nice. He sees you when you're sleeping. He knows when you've been awake. He knows if you've been bad or good, so be good for goodness sake. That's not a good message, really. It's not. We don't want our children behaving, obeying, following the rules and doing what they know to be right because they want a present from Santa. We want them to understand someone is watching them, and that is the one who created them. And this just goes back to the fact that many of these stories that have embedded moral lessons turn out not to be very good and healthy moral lessons. You know, Pinocchio is just flat not good when it comes to teaching moral lessons. Jiminy Cricket is just absolutely wrong. Don't let your conscience be your guide. There are an awful lot of people who have done absolutely horrible things with consciences that gave them no trouble whatsoever. The conscience is as affected by sin as every other part of the human being. When it comes to Santa Claus, got good stuff, by the way, by social media, Facebook, Twitter, also coming in by email. Lots of folks writing in, parents, to say, we always have to tell our children the truth. I think that's really important. Some writing in to say, when it comes to Santa, the issue must not be, do we tell them the truth or do we not tell them the truth, but do we talk much about Santa or do we not? I think that's also good. Lots of folks writing in to say, you know, there is a historical St. Nicholas. It's good to point to him. Lots of folks writing in to say, look, while we're telling our children the truth, we need to tell them how to tell the truth in love. Oh, that's a challenge, isn't it? You know, one final thought. A lot of folks don't think about how Santa Claus and much of the paraphernalia of our cultural Christmas is about selling stuff. Just in terms of the conversation about Santa Claus, you realize that the Coca-Cola Bottling Company had a great deal to do with the development of Santa Claus as you imagine him, seeing him in terms of the advertisements of Coca-Cola. The Macy's department store in New York City had a lot to do with the cultural development of Santa Claus. And what we think about in terms of the Santas you see in the mall and elsewhere, a lot of people don't know where a lot of this stuff comes from. Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer, that did not emerge from a Christmas special. That emerged from an advertising brochure and a little story that was told by folks as an advertisement for the Montgomery Ward Corporation. That goes back to 1939, where Rudolph was helping Montgomery Ward to sell stuff at Montgomery Ward's. And that's the way it turns out. And we also need to help our children to understand that an awful lot of what they see in our culture around us is there to encourage them to do something, and in this case, to buy something. This is the place for intelligent Christian conversations. Good to have had this conversation with you today. About once a year this comes up, and this year it seems to have come up with an unusual intensity. There's got to be a reason for that. I'll meet you tomorrow for Ask Anything Wednesday on the Albert Mueller Program.
Thanks for listening, and be sure to visit our website, www.albertmoeller.com. You'll find archives of past shows and other important resources. You can also email your questions and comments. That's www.albertmoeller.com. Be sure to join us next time for the Albert Mueller Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter.